Hello, and thank you for listening to this RCGP podcast on the holistic approach to eczema. I'm Dr. Tony Hazel, GP and RCGP e-learning fellow. Today, I will be interviewing Dr. Angelica Razak, who is a GP with a special interest in dermatology. Dr. Razak works as a specialty doctor in dermatology at King's College Hospital and is an executive committee member of the Primary Care Dermatology Society, or PCDS. So I will start by thanking her for the very useful PCDS website, which I use all the time. Welcome, Angelica.
Thank you so much, Tony, for inviting me to do this with you today. I'm very much looking forward to that.
So eczema is a disease of the skin, obviously, and sometimes it's easy to get caught up in the skin-specific management and to forget about the whole person, a person who might well have other atopic conditions as well as eczema. Could you tell us a little bit about the link between other atopic conditions and eczema?
Sure. I mean, we're talking about the atopic march here, and this concept was developed to describe the progression of atopic disorder from atopic dermatitis or eczema in infants to allergic rhinitis and asthma in children in a typical kind of sequence. Atopy itself is defined as a personal or familiar propensity to produce IgE antibodies and sensitization in response to environmental triggers. The development of these diseases is strongly influenced by both genetic and environmental factors. In other words, progression is dependent on various factors, including the presence of filaggrin mutations, as well as the time and onset and the severity of atopic dermatitis. Some studies actually suggest that a dysfunctional skin barrier, which is sort of the underlying problem in eczema, serves as a site for allergic sensitization to antigens, which in turn promotes allergic nasal responses and airway hyperreactivity. So one study was actually mentioning that about 70% of patients with severe atopic dermatitis develop asthma, compared to only 20 to 30% in those with mild atopic dermatitis. And overall, sort of the prevalence in a general population is 8% without any atopic dermatitis. So I think it's very important that we explain to parents of children suffering from atopic dermatitis that good control of their condition may reduce the risk of sensitization and progression to other atopic disorders.
That's really interesting. And it's fascinating to see that we might be able to prevent the development of some other atopic conditions. Could you explain a bit about how good early management of eczema might spare a child from developing other conditions such as food allergy?
So there is evidence that early correction of the dysfunctional skin barrier in atopic dermatitis with emollient therapy reduces the risk of sensitization and progression to other atopic disorders. Furthermore, atopic dermatitis and food allergy commonly coexist, particularly in those with early onset atopic dermatitis and in those with severe and persistent atopic dermatitis. However, further studies are needed to determine whether food allergy represents an initial step of the atopic march in infants or whether it is an independent predictor. So a dysfunctional skin barrier allows allergens to penetrate the skin. This allergen is then being presented to Langerhans cells, which stimulate an immune response and cause the sensitization. The allergens are mainly house dust mites, animal dander, mold, and pollen, and they are all involved in the development of rhinitis and asthma. Peanut sensitization facilitated through household consumption and airborne peanut allergens may lead to a peanut allergy, one study showed. But we equally have seen the LEAP study that early childhood exposure to peanut decreases the risk of developing peanut allergy and that the tolerance to peanuts remains after 1 year of not eating peanuts. In Australia, they're currently doing a very interesting study, which is called the PEBBLE study. And they are evaluating whether a particular ceramide containing emollient can be preventative and uphold the atopic march. So I think as long as we are awaiting further evidence, the main message remains optimal eczema management and being alert to coexisting conditions and diagnose and manage those accordingly. But certainly using emollient therapy has huge benefits to patients and will perhaps in future show even upholding the atopic march.
Thank you very much. I'm always really pushing the emollient message, but I'm never quite sure how much it gets through. So moving on to the holistic management of the patient in front of us, however old they are, you've written two fantastic modules on eczema, which are going up on our website, and I'd highly recommend those listening to go and have a look at them. We wanted in this podcast to particularly focus on some specific aspects of eczema, one of which is eczema of the hand. So how would you deal with hand eczema, and how is it different to eczema elsewhere on the body?
Yes, I am aware hand eczema doesn't actually feature in our two modules, yet it is an important feature of atopic dermatitis. And it can be sort of even exist as, or it can exist as a single entity. So if it's a feature of atopic dermatitis early on in life, I think conversations actually need to take place about possible impact on future choice of occupation, for example, if a child actually in childhood already presents with severe hand eczema. If it's just a single entity, then history and examination and clinical signs are really, really important, because it could be actually that the person had, as a child, has had eczema and now in later life actually presents with just hand eczema whilst they have thought they'd actually grown out of eczema. In terms of clinical signs, we will look at the signs. For example, do we see little vesicles on the particularly the sides of the fingers or on the palms? Then we would perhaps think this is more vesicular hand eczema or pamphylix. If the signs are more scaly and sore and there's a tendency to have fissures, then we perhaps think more about contact irritant dermatitis or contact allergic dermatitis. And again, the history comes into place. What is it these patients are exposed to? What are they using frequently? Is it something that actually is an allergen, or is it just an irritant like soaps or sanitizers, for example? If the clinical sign is more sort of white palmar lines and a little bit of scale and erythema, then this might be actually a tinea infection, so tinea manium, and we should check feet in either case. We can also have an autoeczematous response or it reaction, which is this phenomenon of eczema appearing as a reaction to an infection elsewhere. And we often see that sort of in the foot-hand relation. The principles of management are very much like for all the eczema. Soap substitutes and emollients are mainstay of the treatment. For hands, we might need to use more potent or even super potent topical steroids, because the skin is quite thick and requires sort of more potency. We should definitely identify triggers and avoid them, and if necessary, wear gloves. We should consider referring to patch testing if a contact allergic dermatitis is suspected.
Thank you very much. There's a couple of things in there I certainly haven't thought about in the past, particularly thinking of tinea manium. So I'll be looking out for that from now on. Now, another big issue, particularly for the families of small children with eczema, is sleep disturbance. We all know how distressing it is to be itchy, and how awful it is to be the parent of a child who won't sleep. And if the itch stops the child from sleeping, it's going to have an impact on that child as well as on their siblings and the whole family. What would you say when a family asks for your advice on that issue?
I totally agree. Sleep disturbance is a huge issue for those that are concerned with eczema. And children often wake at night due to itch. And this, as you rightly said, has an impact on the whole family and needs to be acknowledged. And often we need to actually ask for it, because it might not be the first thing that is volunteered when we see a patient or a parent of a child with eczema. very important is, like always, optimizing of treatments. If there's suboptimal treatment, the child will itch and will not sleep. So I am a great fan of developing sort of evening routines, and that could include a bath with soap substitutes and emollients straight afterwards applied to the whole body. And then if active treatment, such as the topical steroids, are being used, sort of we should wait 20 to 30 minutes to apply those. Areas that are particularly prone to being scratched could be covered with a Tubi Fast or even with special garments that are available. Parents should aim to keep nails of their children short and perhaps even use mittens to minimize scratching and injury to the skin through scratching. Antihistamines, actually, in the management of eczema have only a limited role. However, sedative antihistamines such as chlorpheniramine may aid sleep and can therefore be helpful, but they do sadly not reduce itch. So it's all about optimizing treatment, acknowledging that there is a problem with sleeping and trying to support parents in the management of optimal treatment.
Thank you very much. Now, in the e-learning modules, we discuss the case of a child with eczema, and then we return to them as a young adult at university, struggling to cope with flares and with the psychological impact of eczema. And sometimes it's very obvious right up front how much stress eczema is causing, but sometimes you have to dig a bit more into the history. The patient doesn't necessarily bring it up. Do you routinely ask about psychological stress, or do you only discuss it if the patient raises it?
No, I think it is actually very important to always ask for it, time permitting, of course, as well. Because the psychological impact of living with a chronic skin condition is considered to be a lot higher than, for example, living with diabetes. And especially young people being so self-conscious and exposed to the effects of social media often struggle with the chronic element of eczema. So I have sort of simple questions that I asked. For example, has your eczema ever stopped you from doing something? Or on a scale from 1 to 10, how much does your eczema actually bother you? And that gives sort of a good indication of the impact their condition has on their life. This can then be followed up by using sort of more formal tools such as the Dermatology Life Quality Index, which can be downloaded from the Cardiff University website, or the patient-oriented eczema measure, which can also be downloaded from the internet. In general practice, we are also very familiar with PHQ-9 and the GAD questionnaires that can, of course, be used as well. And then kind of signposting or even referring to something like IAPT or patient support groups that may very well be indicated. And as a matter of fact, I think at any consultation, signposting to support groups, I think that should be part of our routine of dealing with patients with skin conditions.
Thank you. Yeah, it's useful to give patients somewhere to go. And so many of the support groups now have nice online forums and things like that where they can get help. So if there is significant psychological stress or their eczema is causing mental health problems or contributing to them, how should we help these patients? Because I guess if the patients are asked, what could we do to help? They just say, well, make my eczema go away. But we can't cure their eczema. So what practically useful things can we do?
Yes, you're right. There is actually no cure for atopic dermatitis, or at least not at the moment. And it is a message that is very, very difficult to take in for patients. I think sort of exploring their ideas, concerns and expectations further is paramount in any consultation. And of course, optimizing treatments, like I said before, but also sort of considering maybe alternative options, including phototherapy or systemic treatments in intermediate or secondary care. I found sort of looking at habit reversal techniques, if the itch scratch cycle is a main issue and needs breaking, quite useful. And I often just advise sort of if you are very itchy and you have the urge to scratch, rather than getting your fingers into there and your nails into there and cause injury to the skin, perhaps just apply gentle pressure to the area or use sort of distraction techniques by pinching yourself somewhere else. So people can kind of work out what works best for them, because often it is over years of having suffered with eczema, patients develop certain habits and they are very difficult to reverse, but need reversing if we want full control of the air condition. And of course, in very severe cases, sort of thinking about involving mental health services, or if locally a psychoderm service is available, that would be fabulous, where a psychologist next to dermatologist manage patients with severe psychological impact because of their skin condition. I think in the times of social prescribing, there's certainly room to consider that as well. And patients often have huge costs, not just because of prescriptions, which they obviously can address with prepayment prescriptions, but they need to wash regularly. They need to wash their clothes more regularly because they're using often emollients and very greasy emollients as well that stain clothes. And, for that, there may be actually allowances available, which may even need to be supported by a letter from us. More often, though, I think active listening and empathy will go a long way, as well as I mentioned before, signposting to support groups and organizations, and in eczema patients, obviously, the National Eczema Society.
Thank you. I love the idea of a psychoderm service. I wish we had one locally to us. That would be amazing. I wonder how many there actually are that don't have a massive waiting list. Anyway, that's probably all we have time for today. Thank you very much to Dr. Angelica Razak for her work on the e-learning modules and for recording the podcast today. In our other podcast, we cover the first eczema consultation in more detail, so please do listen to that and have a look at the e-learning modules, which explore this area in more detail using a case-based approach. Thank you for listening.